Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'a Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief format available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on the fifth wide line of Daf Zayin, or if you prefer, 16 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance at the side under our Nosei, our topic heading, where we've written Ma dinom shel beitzim shenimtzu b'soich imon. What is the halachic status of eggs found inside a chicken that you slaughtered? The Gemara, Gufa represents a quote of that which had been mentioned before, and now we are going to focus on it. Hashocheres atarnegoilus, one who slaughters a chicken, umotza bo beitzim gemurois, and he found complete eggs. These are eggs that would have emerged through her laying the eggs just a short while afterwards had you not slaughtered the hen, and you found complete eggs. Mutorois la'ochlon b'cholov. You can eat them with milk. In other words, even though you're taking them out of the chicken has the status of meat, and meat and milk is forbidden. The eggs that are complete, that are found within, are not the same. They are considered what we call parava. They are not meat, and they can therefore be eaten with milk. Rabbi Yankiv Oymer, im hoyu me'urois begidin asurin. If the eggs are wound up or intertwined with veins, so they are forbidden. They would have a meat status. Man tana leha detonu rabbanan. Here we have a Tanaic source. There is no name, and we want to know who the author of the source is. Now, before we learn this source, let us first make a comment. Within this source, there are going to be terms. If you want to look ahead, you can see terms like shlal shel beitzim, eshkol shel beitzim. These terms have a translation. They have meaning. However, at a certain point in the Gemara, the term is going to be understood a certain way and then undergo a change in its understanding. So we have to be a bit flexible as we go on. We will present at times explanations that don't conform to the final explanation for that particular term. So, as we said, be flexible and make sure that the flow of the Gemara makes sense as we go through the Gemara, of course. There's a tat no se, a subtopic that we have on the side of the Gemara, and we've written Tumo shebo ekev achilas nevelas of tohor. There is a special kind of defilement that is associated with the eating of an unslaughtered kosher variety bird. So, a chicken is the classic case. A pigeon is also a kosher variety bird. A dove, any of these type of birds that died, one can become tomei, defiled, upon eating them, and only upon eating them. And this tuma will also affect the clothing that you are wearing at the time you are swallowing their meat. And it must be pointed out that the velas oftar does not communicate tuma in any other way. It only communicates tuma through eating it. It's something that is unique to this category. The velas of tohar is metame begodem abeis hablio. That's how it appears in Hebrew. So, when we learn about the velas of tohar, and we're going to then talk about eggs found inside dead chickens, the assumption is going to be that if you see that the eggs are communicating tuma, then they have a meat status. Let us continue now with the Gemara after all of that introduction. So we have a source. We asked, who is the author of this unnamed source? Ha'oichel minavelas oiftar, one who eats from the meat of a dead kosher variety bird. Don't be confused with the word tohor. Tohor means kosher variety. We're talking now about a becoming defiled as a result of eating the meat from such a bird. Min hashlal shel beitzim, min ha'atzamos u'min ha'gidin, u'min ha'bosar shenitlash min ha'chai, tohor. Here's a list of items. If one ate from the shlal shel beitzim, and at this point we explain, it means those eggs that are still mu'urin begidin, they're still intertwined with veins and sinews. One eats min ha'atzamos, from bones, or from the gidin, from sinews. U'min ha'bosar shenitlash min ha'chai, or from meat that was ripped off the bird while it was still alive. That type of meat does not have nevela status. Therefore, any of these items, the shlal shel beitzim, atzamos, gidin, or bosar, shenitlash min ha'chai, tohar, the person will not become defiled. They don't have nevela status. A second category, a list, min ho'eshkol shel beitzim. Now, at this point, and be careful, the word eshkol shel beitzim is going to undergo changes in meaning, but the explanation we give for it right now, and it might in fact be the explanation that sticks to the end as well, it's the meat from the spine section of the bird. It's that section of the bird in which the eggs are attached. So that's the eshkol shel beitzim. It's meat of the spinal area to which eggs are generally attached. So that's the eshkol shel beitzim. Now, kurkavon is one of the organs of digestion of a bird. Uvnei me'ayim, the intestines, o shehimcha es hachele v'goma, or he melted some bird fat and swallowed it, tome. That will impart defilement. Hence, these are clearly examples of meat of the bird. Man tano, who would author min hashlal shel beitzim tohor? Who would author that idea? And this was in the first. This was in the first list, and we described that as eggs that were wound up with veins and sinews. And it says tohor. Tohor means the person is not defiled. It would indicate to us that it's not meat. So Omar Rav Yosef in this, now this is a, you see the diamond aleph? This is Loshon 1. The first Loshon, there's an Iko the Amri, a couple lines later, of a second version of Rav Yosef, and dealing with authorship here. So the first version of Rav Yosef is that this source is delo k'Rav Yankiv. It's not in accordance with Rav Yankiv. D'ikir Rav Yankiv, if it were conforming to his approach, ha'omar, did he not say just a few lines ago, im hoyu me'uros begidim asuros, if the eggs are wound up with veins and sinews, they have meat status and you cannot eat them with milk. In this source, that same item we are indicating it does not have meat status. And how do we know that? Because one does not become tomei by virtue of nevela sof tohor. Tuma would be achieved if he were eating meat of the bird. But when you say tohor, it indicates it's not the meat. Rav Yankiv says it is considered meat. You can't eat it with milk. Omar le Abaye. Mimai. Abaye says, who says that you have to associate these two areas of halacha? That you necessarily associate the din of nevelas of tohor and defilement with meat status regarding meat and milk. Dilmo ad kan lo koma Rav Yankiv hosam. Elo le'inyan isura. Could be that Rav Yankiv said his din regarding basar, that the eggs intertwined with veins and sinews have meat status, that is l'inyan isura. And Rashi points out that this would be an iser, a rabbinic iser of basar b'chalav. So the rabbis imposed an iser, don't eat it with milk. But it's a purely rabbinic consideration in the realm of what we call iser v'heter. That's the realm of halacha that under which you find the laws of kashrus appearing. Avol le'inyan tumolo. But as far as categorizing the eggs as meat to impart tumas nevela, even Rabbi Yankiv would say no, that it's not considered meat. V'chitemo, you might say, you might ask, l'inyan tuma nami negzor, why not? Why not impose a gezerah, a rabbinic restriction here too, and consider it meat? Not like what is said in the Brisa. The Gemara says, no, we afushi tumahu, that you're adding tumah that way. You're creating more tumah in the world. Afushi tumah midirabbanan lo mafshinan. And the rabbis don't look approvingly upon that idea of adding tumah to the already long list of items that impart defilement. And the reason for that is that if you do impose tumah on it, so then you're going to end up ruining food that is tohor through contact with this item, and we don't want to do that. So at this point, the Gemara rejects Rav Yosef's certainty that the source dealing with Nevela Sof Tomer is not according to Rabbi Yankiv. It could very well be according to Rabbi Yankiv. Rabbi Yankiv views the eggs, Mu'uros Begidim, as meat within the realm of Iser Veheter, within the realm of Basar B'cholav, but within the realm of Tuma, he wouldn't consider it meat. The Ika, the Amri. And we have now another Lashon. And before we go on with this second lashon, we want to glance it in the Rashi, the under the Gemara text, v'ika di amri, de eshkol de seifa, have a mashmalei the Rav Yosef. Notice we're focusing on that term eshkol shel beitzim, and at this point it's mashma to Rav Yosef beitzim hamu'urois begidin. Now, up till now, in the first Loshon, the Aleph Diamond Loshon, we were speaking about the first part of the Tanaic source. We had cited the Shlal Shel Beitzim. Here, in this Bay's version, the second Loshon, we're going to be focusing on the second part of the Tanaic source, the Roman numeral number 2 section, and look at the term Eshkol Shel Beitzim. Now, when we read the source, we gave an explanation of Eshkol Shel Beitzim. However, right now, we're going to think that Eshkol Shel Beitzim of the Seifa is that which we were explaining before of Shlal Shel Beitzim. So as we said earlier, a little flexibility is necessary. So at this point, it's going to undergo a change though. At this point, the term Eshkol Shel Beitzim is assumed by Rav Yosef to mean eggs intertwined with veins and sinews. And the term Shlal, Rashi goes on, let's read that from the beginning of line. We have diamonds in the Rashi, the beginning of line. The Eshkol, the Seifa of the Mashal Rav Yosef Beitzim Amu'uros Begidim. The Eshkol of the Seifa, which resulted in Tumah, Tumah, Nevelas of Tohor, is assumed to be the eggs intertwined with the veins and sinews. Ushlau? The term Shlau came from the first part of the Tanaic source, Roman numeral number 1 in that Tanaic source. Have a mashmalei she'ein non mu'urois kol kach kamo isana gemuros k'roivois lovoi bohen klipa l'halavona she'ein non defukos yofa elama'at. That the term Shlau of the beginning of the source represents eggs very advanced in their development. They're almost ready to have the hard white outer shell formed. So, and they're not so intertwined and interwoven with the veins and sinews. So with this Hava Amina in mind, we continue reading. Havamina means an initial level of understanding or initial form of understanding that will undergo change, though. So let's continue. Ve'iko di amri. Man tano minho eshkol shel beit simtome. Who would say that eating eggs that are intertwined with veins and sinews results in tuma? Omar of Yosef, Rabbi Yankiv, this would be like Rabbi Yankiv from before the Omar. He said, "Imhoyimuros begidim asuros." Eggs that are intermeshed with veins and sinews are usur to eat with milk. They have meat status, and with that in mind, the seifa of the unnamed source above, Roman numeral number 2 in that source, which resulted in Tuma, would sound like Rav Yaakov's approach. Omar le Abaye. Abaye addresses Rav Yosef, just like we saw in the first Lashon. Abaye reacts, and he says, Mimai de Eshkol mehanoch de Talyo be Eshkol. Who says that the term Eshkol is a reference to, and the word Eshkol was in the Seifa, was a reference to the eggs that are intertwined with veins and sinews. Dilma Eshkol Gufei. Maybe it's a reference to the meat of the bird that is attached to the bird's spine, and that is the location in which the eggs develop. So that Eshkol is not like you thought, it's eggs intertwined with veins, but rather it's the meat of the bird itself. The Chitema, you might ask, well, Eshkol Gufei Maila Meimra. If Eshkol in the Tanaic source where the Roman numeral number 2 appeared is a reference to the meat itself, what that's obvious then that it will result in Tum'ah of Nevelas Of Tohar. It's clear that one who eats it will be Tomei. The Gemara says, you might think it's clear, but it's not so clear. It's taught together with the other organs, the korkavon, they are also organs. The afagav, the boser ninu, even though they are meat, and you could say, well, then it's obvious you'd become tummy, and yet the Tanaic source says it, you'll ask, so why? Kevon diiko inshi deloachli, since there are people that don't eat those sections. People, for example, don't generally speak eat the eyeballs of cows. Now, does that mean that the eyeball of a cow is not considered meat? People, many societies, and this is very much, we'll call it, dependent on different social groups and different cultures, we'll call it cultural dependency, is different type other organs. People, do you eat lungs, for example? Some people don't eat lungs. Some people do. And since there are people that don't eat lungs, for example, would you say that it's not considered meat? So that was the Havamina here, that since there are some people that don't eat these organs, the korkavon, the me'ayim, and they don't eat the eshkol, the meat in which the eggs develop, so it's derich lashminan, it's necessary for the source to tell me, even though people, there are many that don't eat korkavon and b'nei me'ayim, we have to tell you, if one does eat it from a dead, a kosher variety bird, dead, unslaughtered bird, he will become tamei. Hachanami, so to the eshkol. It really is meat. It's the meat in which the eggs develop. It's not the eggs with veins around them, but it's the meat itself. Since there are people that don't eat eshkol, it's the rich lashmin. It was necessary to teach that it imparts defilement of Nevelas of Tohar. So what we have done in this second Lashon, like we did in the first, is Abaye says that a conclusion that Rav Yosef was trying to reach is not definitive. And that in this version, it's not definitive that the source represents Shitas Rav Yankiv. We continue in the Gemara with a new topic. Hence, we have a slash mark in the Gemara. The topic heading on the side, Kesher Bein Zman Tashmish Lizman Leida. Is there a connection between the time of day that different creatures engage in intimacy and reproduction with the time of birth? Nafgamina legabi tarnegolus ubeitzasa shenimseis bahashkoma biyomtov. This has practical legal ramifications with regard to a chicken and its egg, and if we can prove or show a source in which it is established that chickens practice their intimacy or their reproduction only by daytime hours. And such creatures will produce their offspring only by day. What would happen if you check a chicken's coop before sunrise on Yom Tov and you don't find any eggs there? Or alternatively, you do find an egg there. What will that tell us about the time that the egg was laid? Let us now turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, kol shetashmisho biyom nolad biyom. Creatures who engage in reproduction in intimacy during daytime hours, their offspring are born by day. Kol shetashmisho balaylo nolad balaylo. Creatures whose reproduction is done at night, their offspring are born at night. Kol shetashmisho bein bayom ubein balaylo nolad bein bayom ubein balaylo. Creatures whose reproduction is not restricted to one time or the other, so their offspring are born at both time periods. And now the source goes on giving us a list of examples, and that's what this house marking highlights, the list of each category. Kol shetashmisha bayom nolad bayom zu tarnagolas. The daytime creatures, that is the chicken. Kol shetashmisha balaylo nolad balaylo, the nighttime creatures, zu atalef. That would be the atalef. Rashi gives you a French translation of that. If there's any value in knowing the modern Hebrew, uses atalef for what we call a bat. But I'm not committing myself to that translation. Rashi's French word is what you would have to research. And number three, kol shetashmisha bein bayom bein balaylo, that is Adam, that is man, v'chol d'domi lay, and all other similar creatures. Omar Mar. Well, this is a quote from the source. Kol shetashmisha biyom nola biyom zu tarnagolas. Creatures that engage in their reproduction by day, their offspring are born by day. And when we say born, it means the egg is laid. Lamai nafgamina. What practical legal ramifications does this have? Answer, l'chad Rav Mori, braid Rav Gahana. It has ramifications for Rav Mori's teaching. D'yomar Rav Mori, braid Rav Gahana. Bodak bekino shel tarnagolim me'erev yom tov, v'lo motza bo beitza. A person checked out his chicken coop on the day before yom tov, and he did not find any eggs. And he checked it out right at the end of the day. That means, as Rashi says, he checked it bein hashmoshes, and there were no eggs. So, as far as the owner is concerned, any egg that would appear after this is not from erev yom tov. It would be, then of course, a yom tov egg, and a beitz shenolda b'yom tov is osir. So this fellow checks it out, as we said, right at the end of erev yom tov, the end of the daylight hours of the Yom Chol, the weekday, right before the onset of Yom Tov, found no egg. Ula mochar hishkim u'motza ba beitza. The word hishkim is very important to translate. Hishkim, Rashi says, koidem alos ha-shachar. Hishkim means he woke up early, and Rashi adds, it's before daylight hours, and lo and behold, u'motza ba beitza, he finds an egg in that chicken coop. What does Rav Mori tell us? Muteres. The egg is mutter. It did not come out at night. Well, v'halo bodak. What do you mean it didn't come out at night? He checked it by day. He checked it by the end of the previous day and didn't see any eggs there. Eimar, lo bodak, yofa yofa. We'll have to simply say he didn't check thoroughly enough. We are totally somech on that which it says. We rely on that which it says in this source that Tashmisha bayom, yoledes bayom. Chickens have their reproduction activity by day. It lays eggs. It lays fertilized eggs only by day. It could not have come out at night. It could not be a beitza shenoldo bayom tov. As the Gemara goes on to say, v'afilu bodak yofa, even if the guy says, I checked thoroughly, I still have an explanation of how you didn't find the egg. Amar, I'll tell you, yotzisa rubo v'chozra havoi. Uchad Rabbi Yochanan. It's a case where the majority of the egg actually did come out of the chicken on the day before Yom Tov, and it reabsorbed it. It sucked it back in. That's v'chozra. It went back in. As Rav Yochanan taught. And this Rav Yochanan we had mentioned in our previous shiur, where Rav Yochanan declares that when rove of the egg comes out, that is considered its birth. And the fact that it is reabsorbed into the chicken doesn't change the status. The Gemara asks, Amy, is this really so? V'omar Rav Yossi ben Sholom Arav. And on the side, we have a triangle explanation under the Mivneh. We'll see Meimros Shor Rav Yossi ben Sholom Arav, Rav Yossi quoting Rav here and later on. So he says, Bodak bekina shel tarnegulos me'er of Yom Tov v'lo motzo v'beitza. A person checked his chicken coop out right before Yom Tov set in, and he didn't find an egg. Ulamacher hishkimu motzo v'beitza. And the next he gets up before dawn and finds an egg. Asura. In other words, the same circumstances as we just described under Rav Mori's teaching, and he rules asura. Notice that we dash on asura, and directly above this a few lines, we dash on muteres. So, you know, so Rav Yossi ben Shaul quoting Rav doesn't seem to agree with the certainty of, or the reliability of the teaching in the source above. The Gemara says there are two different categories of egg production. Hosam bedesafno me'aro. The case of Rav Yossi ben Shaul described was not a fertilized egg. It wasn't the result of intimacy of the chicken with its rooster. It was safno me'ara. This is an expression that we explained in our previous year as well. It's the phenomenon of chicken that will cause egg production through their rubbing or creating friction on the ground that causes egg development in chickens, even without fertilization. Of course, eggs that are safna mi'ara will not produce chicks. You need a rooster for that purpose. But as far as the actual egg coming forth from a chicken, it could happen through safna. Now, that is not what the source was describing. The Gemara asks, Ihochi, if it is so that eggs could come out at night, and those are the safno me'aro situations, well, the Rav Mori nami emo me'aro safno. In the Rav Mori case, just a few lines up, how can he matir it? He allowed the egg that the gentleman found before dawn. Why? Maybe it was safno me'aro. And it would be a Beit Shenol de Yom Tov. It would then be an egg laid on Yom Tov, and we know that that is forbidden. The Gemara says, "B'di'ika zachar b'hada." In the Rav Mori case, there was a rooster around. Question: B'di'ika zachar nami yema me'aro safna. So what? There's a rooster around. Maybe this chicken didn't take advantage of the male partner and just did safna me'aro, and we should aser the egg. Omar Ravina. Gemiri, Ravina says, we have a tradition. When there is a male around, when there is a rooster around, the hen will not engage in safno me'ara. So that in the Rav Mori case, there was a rooster around, the egg could not have been laid at night. Question, the ad kama, this is a general question. How far away can the rooster be and we will still be certain that the hen engaged in reproduction with the rooster? Omar Rav Gamdo Mishmei Derav Kol Hecha. We continue at the top of Amid Beis. As long as the Shoma Kalei Biyamama, the distance that rooster cackling or crowing can be heard during the daytime. Rashi points out that noise travels less during the day than at night. So the extent of the sound travel of rooster crowing by day, that is the limit. So we'll see an illustration of that as we just go on in the Gemara. Ovad Rav Mori Uvda, Rav Mori Paskin, he ruled in a case where a fellow checked the coop Erev Yom Tov, did not find the egg and woke up before daybreak and found an egg and was matu the egg, based on a case of Ad Shisin Boti. The rooster was located within a distance of 60 houses. We'll just assume that there was some type of, let's say, known size to houses, and then you multiply it by 60, and you'll get the statistic. But the point is that Rav Mori relied on the presence of the rooster within 60 houses of where the hen was located, and concluded that this hen must have had relations with the rooster, hence it could not be a nighttime birth of the egg. And therefore, the egg definitely came out during the day, meaning Erev Yom Tov, and it's not a problem of a Beit Shishin Olda B'Yom Tov. Some other qualifications concerning the rooster access to the hen. The Iko Naro Lo Ovra, if there is a river between them, so the rooster will not cross the river or vice versa to mate. The Iko Mavra Ovra, if there is a bridge, so it will cross it. The Iko Mitzra Lo Ovra, if the bridge isn't a regular bridge, but rather it's a rope that's slung across the river with a narrow board on which to walk, so the bird won't walk on that. Now have uvda the avra amitzra. The Gemara, however, reports an incident where it did. So you can imagine the attachment between this rooster and hen in order to overcome any bird fears, and it did go over the mitzra. B'mai ukimta. How did we set up Rabbi Yossi Bar Shaul? Now, he was in the triangle, and he was he ruled stringently that the egg is forbidden in the case of the fellow having checked his coop Erev Yom Tov and did not discover then the egg, but discovered it at the end of the night during Yom Tov. So how did we set that up? The safno me'ara. We said the chicken had rubbed on the ground, and there was no rooster, and that could cause an egg to be laid at night on Yom Tov in this case. Well, if that's the case, my ira bodak. Why does Rav Yossi ben Shaul present the halacha where the owner had checked out the coop? Ki lo bodak nami. Even if he didn't check out the coop, we would still aser the egg? The Gemara answers, ki lo bodak, if he didn't check the coop erev yom tov, emo me esmol havoi. I will tell you that it did come out. We then have room to say that we're in a doubt. I'll say, well, you know, it was late yesterday. It was late erev yom tov, and it would be mutter. Ihachi. Well, if that's how you're looking at things, you're looking at, let's say, at the side or at the option of being matir, of being lenient. Well, ki bodak nami emo. Even if he did check it out erev yom tov and didn't find the egg there, I could still say emo yotza ruba v'chazra hi uchzer b'yochanan, that it did come out erev yom tov and was sucked back in, that the majority came out erev yom tov and was sucked back in, and it still should be mutter. So what's the significance of his having checked? The Gemara answers, de Rabbi Yochanan lo shachiach. The case of an egg, the majority coming out and then being sucked back in, is very unusual. Therefore, if the fellow, just to review now, if the fellow did not check the coop erev Yom Tov, and he woke up before dawn on Yom Tov itself and found the egg, we would be matir it by saying, well, this egg might very well have been laid on erev Yom Tov. It's not a Beit Shinul de Yom Tov. If he checked the coop out and did not find an egg there erev Yom Tov, and found it before the crack of dawn, and there was no rooster around, I will tell you, it's a Sachna Me'ara, and it is a Beitza Shinul de Yom Tov, and it is therefore forbidden. And if you'll say, well, why should you forbid it? Maybe the majority emerged, every other will suck back. No, the Gemara says, no, that's a very unusual thing. We won't take that into consideration. Now, you might ask then, well, if here you're not taking it into consideration, then how was it before in Rav Mori's case we did factor that in and hence allowed it? So Rashi answers that, and he tells you, he says, we will say that when a rooster was in the vicinity. When a rooster is in the vicinity, the hen will, for halachic purposes, will definitely have had relations with the rooster. And then we have what the source told us, that when mating takes place by creatures that mate only during the day, it is with certainty that its offspring emerge only during the day. And since those are, and in my case, offspring, we're referring to the eggs, the fertilized eggs, they will be laid only by day. And because those are, we'll say, considered facts, then we have, then the only explanation for his not finding the egg in the coop is the Rabbi Yochanan case of Yotzeruba v'Chazra. But once again, that's because there was a rooster. If there's no rooster around, then we will, in fact, view the Rabbi Yochanan din of Yotzeruba v'Chazra as being an unusual event, and we would not factor that in. The Omar of Yossi ben Sholom Arav, another halach of his that is seemingly not related to the issue of eggs at all, but it's here most likely because it's the same name. Hai Tuma Shchika, ground garlic. Tuma, the tuf and the shin interchange, and the word could be shum. Shum is garlic. Tuma shrikos, ground garlic. Sakanto legiluya, is dangerous if it's left exposed. There is a concept in halacha called gilui. Gilui refers to different beverages that, if left uncovered, we suspect. If it was left uncovered and unguarded, we suspect that a venomous creature, a snake, may have drunk from it and left a souvenir, left some of its venom behind, and therefore, if left uncovered, you cannot partake of it. And so Rav Yosef ben Shol says that same halacha of gilui, suspicion snake came and ate from it, applies to ground garlic as well, and it therefore ground garlic left exposed represents a sakona, danger, and hence you are not allowed to eat it. Beishamayomrim saor bekezayas. and he said, Chometz Bekakoseves, the shiur for sourdough on Pesach is measured in terms of an olive quantity, and regular chometz, bread, cakes, that type of thing, regular chometz is measured in terms of a date, and there's a larger amount, so that the stringency, the more restrictive or more strict material is the sa'or, because even if one has a kezias of it, he will already be in violation. Before we go on in the Gemara, there's a topic heading we call the Nosei on the side. Machlokas Beshambis Hillel Beshiurim Shel Chometz U'Sa'or. We're going to look at, into this Machlokas that was featured in the first Mishnah, one of the three controversies between Beshambis Hillel that were featured there regarding the Shi'ur of Chometz on Pesach. As far as Sa'or is concerned, they agree. Beis Shammai will agree that it is measured in terms of a kezias, an olive quantity. My tamayu de Beis Shammai. The Gemara asks, what is the basis, the reason behind Beis Shammai's opinion? And they split. They made the sa'or was bekezias, sa'or the sourdough. We mentioned when we saw this at, in the first Mishnah, if you look at the word sa'or, it phonetically looks like the word sour. And sourdough, that's what many people today use, people today use yeast to cause dough rising. Sourdough is an intensely fermented dough. When added to other doughs, would cause them to rise. My Tamayu Beis Shammai. What is the reason that Beis Shammai assigns a different shiur to Sa'or and Chometz? In other words, they don't have the same quantity for chometz or for Pesach purposes. If we say Pesach purposes, we're talking about a sin of having these around. So what is the reason for Beis Shammai's distinction? Im kein, if it were so that they have one shi'or, one the same quantity, the sor and the chometz have one the same quantity, like Beis Hillel claimed, lichtoiv rachmona chometz v'lo boi sor, let the Torah write in the psukim, just chometz, and not make any reference to sa'or, v'ano amino, and I, on my own, logically, would say, uma chometz she'en chimutzo koshe, because I is chometz, which is not so intensely fermented, and yet it's measured in terms of an olive quantity, sa'or she'chimutzo koshe lo kol she'kein, sa'or, sourdough, which is more intensely fermented, all the more so it would be in terms of a kezias, an olive quantity. Sa'or de kosav rachmono lomali, why does the Torah write something I could have figured out on my own? Lomar loch, the fact the Torah goes ahead and writes sa'or as well, it tells me, lomar loch, shi'uro shelzeh lo kishi'uro shelzeh. The quantity for one is not the same as the quantity for the other. And maybe we should have mentioned this earlier, but there is a pasuk that we've quoted on the side of the Gemara, Shmos Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Zayin. It says in the pasuk, Lo Yeroel Lecho Chometz, Velo Yeroel Lecho Sa'or B'chol Givulecho. And the way we've presented the pasuk, you can see we've dashed underlined the key words. You have Chometz and Sa'or, they are both mentioned. So Beis Shammai reasons, if the Torah mentions both and doesn't leave me to figure one out from the other, it must be to tell me that they are different in terms of their quantities. Ubeis Hillel, Tzrichi Beis Hillel, who does say they have the same shiur. The question then is, if they have the same shiur, why does the Torah bother writing both of them? Write just one. We saw the suggestion, write just chometz, and I would figure on my own that sa'or is also forbidden. So Beis Hillel responds, justifying both being written, even though they both have the same shiur. And this is a long point. We've indicated this with a long marking. Ubeis Hillel says, Tzrichi, I need both. I need the Torah to state both chometz and sa'or. Di'i kosav rachmona sa'or. Had the Torah written the prohibition of sa'or, have amina, I would have thought, Mishum dechimutzo kasha. The reason the Torah doesn't want me to have sour on Pesach is because it's very intense. It's intensely fermented. Avol chometz de'ein chimutzo kasha emoloi. But chometz, which is not so intensely fermented, maybe it's not forbidden. Tzricha, therefore the Torah has to write, in addition to sour, it writes chometz, that it is forbidden. Ve'yi kasav rachmona chometz. Had the Torah written that we are forbidden to have chometz on Pesach Mishum, the roi lachilo chometz is not intensely fermented, it's edible. Bread, pretzels, cookies, cakes, it's roi lachilo, it's fit for eating. Avol sa'or she'ein roi lachilo emaloi, but sourdough, which isn't fit for eating, maybe the Torah doesn't forbid having that. Tzricha, therefore it's necessary to teach that as well. So the fact that both are taught doesn't reflect upon their having different quantities for the violation of Pesach. But they are both written because I wouldn't have been able to figure out the prohibition of the other from just having written one. Now, the Gemara asks a question. Ubeis Shammai. Beis Shammai says they have two different shiurim. Is it so? Less lehu de Rabbi Zeira? Does Beis Shammai, who says they have two different shiurim, not hold from Rabbi Zeira's teaching? The Omar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira, and before we go further in the Gemara, we should point out. There's a pasuk in Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Yud Tes. You can see it on the side. Let's read the whole pasuk. Shivas yomim se'or lo yimotzei bevoteichem. For 7 days you shall not have any se'or in your houses. Ki chol oichel machmetzes v'nichrus o'an v'sheiv me'adas Yisrael be'ger v'ezra choretz. Anyone who eats chometz will suffer the penalty of kores, etc. In the pasuk, we've dashed underlined key words. It opens up speaking about the prohibition of sa'or. And then it goes on to say, well, don't have sa'or in your house, and anyone who eats chometz will be cut off, the victim will be subject to kores. Kind of a strange pasuk. It opens up talking about sa'or, and then it goes on to conclude talking about chometz, and we saw they're two different items. So, Rabbi Zeira has a teaching based on that. And let's see. Beis Shammai, we pointed out, has two different shiurim for sa'or and chometz. Is it then so that Beis Shammai doesn't hold by Rabbi Zeira's teaching? The Omer Rabbi Zeira, Posach HaKosuv B'Sa'or V'Siyem B'Chometz. The Posach opens up talking about sa'or, and then it concludes talking about chometz. Machmetzes is chometz. Lo marloch, to tell me, zehu se'or, zehu chometz. In other words, whatever we say about one, we say about the other, that they are equated. Rashi says, kozeh kein zeh, as is with this, so is with that. Well, they are equated, that's not what Beis Shammai says, though. So, does Beis Shammai not hold from Rabbi Zeira's teaching? Now, Rabbi Zeira, he was an Amora, but he's based on a pasuk. The pasuk begs this teaching. So how could it be that Beis Shammai doesn't acknowledge that? The Gemara answers, and we've used a diamond to add a little structure to the Gemara. We've highlighted le'inyan, we'll see achila, and then shortly thereafter le'inyan bi'or. When we're dealing with the forbidden substances, as far as Pesach is concerned, there are two separate realms. There's the realm of eating, and there is the realm known as biur, the need to rid yourself of it, the prohibition of possessing it. When we speak about the prohibition of possessing it, we're talking about the need to destroy it. So there's the element of eating of chametz and the element of the destruction of chametz. Two separate categories. So the Gemara continues. Le'inyan achila, regarding the realm of eating, which was the posuk that Rabbi Zeira was dealing with. Shmos Yud Beis posuk Yutes, that topic. Kule alma loy pligi. everyone agrees that chometz is measured in terms of a kezias, just like the se'or. In other words, even base shamai. Everyone agrees that se'or and the chometz are measured in terms of kezias. That would mean that if a person eats an olive quantity of chometz, not only Beis Hillel, but Beis Shammai as well will say that the person is Chayev Kores. Ki Pligi, the machloikis between Beis Shammai u Beis Hillel is Le'inyon Bior, concerning the halacha of destroying, and or, as we said before, the prohibition of possessing. Beis Shammai Savri, Lo Yalfino Bior Me'achilo. I don't learn the rules regarding Bior from the laws regarding achila. The result being, by achila, chometz, I agree, is bekezayis. But when it comes to the din of bior, the need to rid yourself of it, if you have just an olive quantity of chometz, according to Beis Shammai, you won't need to get rid of it. You'd have to have a date quantity. Ubeis Hillel Savri, Yalfinon Bior Me Achila. That we do learn the standards to be applied to Bior from the standards we apply to Achila. Itmar Nami, Omar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Yossi likewise says, Machloikes Le'inyan Bior. The controversy between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai regards Bior. Everyone agrees, even Beis Shammai agrees that even chometz will be osur ba'achilo and achiv kores on kezayis, an aleph quantity. Tanyo nami hochim. We have a Tanaic source that backs this up, that the machlokis is regarding bior, not regarding achila. The source begins with the pasuk that we quoted earlier from Shmos Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Zayin, "V'lo yireh lecha chometz, v'lo yireh lecha se'or." Zehu machloikes shebein Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Regarding this pasuk, which deals with bior, you have there machloikes shebein Shammai omrim se'or bekezayis v'chometz bekakoseves. That only se'or is measured in terms of kezayis as far as the issur of possession. Chometz won't be usur according to Beis Shammai if all you have is an olive quantity. You'll be in violation of lo yireh lecha. You'll be violation of possessing the prohibition of possessing chometz only if you have a date quantity of chometz. Ubeis Hillel omrim zeh vezeh bekezayis. Beis Hillel says not only the se'or is bekezayis, but the chometz also is bekezayis in order to be in violation of what we call ba'yiroya ba'yimotze, the prohibition of having. And now we go on with a quote from the Mishnah, and on the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading: Hezra machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel beinyan shchita v'kisui dam b'yom tov. We saw in the Mishnah the third machlokes between Beis Shammai Beis Hillel and the Mishnah is focused on kisui adam in the context of the shchita of chayav ha'of on Yom Tov. We introduced these halachas when we first encountered them, but just to briefly recount, the Torah says that when you slaughter a bird, kosher variety bird, or undomesticated kosher variety animals, you must cover their blood. That's called kisui hadam. Slaughtering is allowed on Yom Tov. What about kisui hadam on Yom Tov? Obviously, for one to go to a plot of ground and take a shovel and dig up some dirt in order to do kisui, that would be strictly forbidden. You're not allowed to dig up dirt on Yom Tov. However, the Mishnah made reference to the possibility of doing kisui adam on Yom Tov, and now we have to find out how and under what circumstances that would take place. So the Mishnah had said, Hashochet chayaviyof, the Loshon, Hashochet equals the evidin l'chadchilalo. It would imply something only post facto, but not as a first choice. So that the Mishnah is saying, well, one who shechted, but not that you're allowed to go ahead and shecht. Emor seifa, ubeis Hillel omrim lo yishchot. In the continuation of the Mishnah, it says, Beis Hillel says, you shall not shecht. Michlav de Tanakama sovar yishchot. So are we then to assume that the Tanakama says, go ahead, yes, and slaughter? But didn't the Tanakama use the word hashochet, which implied only post facto? Ha lo kashya. What we just pointed out as a difficulty is not a difficulty. Beis Hillel, when he says lo yishchot, the negation, the prohibition is not on the issue of shechita. It's as follows. Lo yishchot v'yechasek omar. Beis Hillel is saying that even though you shechted, don't continue the maisa shechita, don't continue the shechita process by doing the kisui. So that as far as the Mishnah is concerned, both parts of the Mishnah, the opening and the continuation, can be read in a bedieved fashion. As far as Beis Hillel in his saying lo yishchot, do not shecht, it's not there to tell me that according to the Tanakama, yes, you can go ahead and shecht, but simply with regard to Beis Hillel, it says even if you did shecht, don't continue further. Don't continue with the kisui. And on that, the Tanakama said, if you did shecht, go ahead and do the kisui. Emor seifa. Let's continue evaluating what we've said through reading the continuation of the Mishnah. It said, Umoidim shim shochat shiachpor badeker v'yachaseh. Beis Hillel concedes that if you did shecht, so go ahead and dig the dirt and do the kisui adam. So Beis Hillel is conceding that if you did, then go ahead and finish off the process. So if that's Beis Hillel conceding in a post facto fashion. Michal de Reisha, now this leaves then again room to imply or infer that the Reisha who disagreed with Beis Hillel was not talking on a post facto basis. So we're not making too much progress. On the one hand, the Mishnah says Hashochet talks in terms of if you did shecht in a post facto sense. But as you read on in the Mishnah and you contrast Beis Hillel with the Tanakama, it seems that the Tanakama was not talking on a post facto basis. We proceed to answer and make sense of the Mishnah. Before we do so, we have bow ties that appear and double underlining on the side under the Mivnet. We've simply noted that Rabo and Rav Yosef, they both of them have their own approaches to the Mishnah, and they say, Hochi Ka'omar, this is how the Mishnah is to be read. So we see these two approaches. There is a very fine difference between their approaches, and that will require special attention. But in the meantime, Omar Rabba Hochi Ka'omar, he says, thusly, you are to understand the Mishnah. Hashochet Shebo Limlach. And here, very something unusual. The opening word of this section of Hashochet, up till now, we thought was a reference to the action of Shechita, one who did Shecht. But now, it's a reference to the individual, the man, the slaughterer, the person. Not the action, but the person. So, Hashochet, someone who is one who practices slaughtering. So someone like that, a slaughterer, Hashochet Shebo Limlach, he comes to consult. Ketzad Omerlo, what should we tell him? He wants to shecht, let us say. Someone wants to shecht a chaya or oaf on Yom Tov. What do we tell him? Beishamay Omrim, Omerlo, Shchoit, Chafor v'chasei. We tell him, slaughter, then dig out the dirt and cover the blood. Ubeis Hillel omrim lo yishchot ela im kein hoyalo ofor muchon mi ba'od yom. But Yisrael says, no, you can't go ahead and shecht unless you have prepared dirt from the day before. If we look at the Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, Hashochet Shabalimlach, Afal Gav Hashochet Amod the Eved, even though the word Hashochet in general implies an action in a post facto form, Al Korcho Hachalechadchila, here it doesn't mean that, but it's an initial issue. Hashochet Shabal, the Shot, one who does slaughtering, who comes to do slaughtering. Ubalimlach lonu ma yaseh. He comes and asks, "What should I do?" Im yishchot im lav. Hoil v'ein lo offer tichuach. Should I shecht or not? Since I don't have loose dirt prepared in a box. So let's say you don't have loose dirt prepared in a box. What do you do? So Beis Shammai says, and we saw Rabbah's reading of the Mishnah. Beis Shammai says, okay, just go ahead, shecht anyway, and then take out with your shovel, take out the dirt. There's much more detail, by the way, to the issue of the shovel and the digging and the dirt removal. This, the Gemara will deal with later. But for our purposes, the Mishnah is telling, Beis Shammai is telling the Shochet, go ahead and shecht, and then do the Kisei Adam. Beis Hillel says, no, we don't tell him to go ahead and shecht. He shouldn't shecht unless he has prepared dirt from before Yom Tov. Rav Yosef Omar, Hochi Omar, very, very similar to the Rabbah approach. He says, thusly, the Mishnah is to be read, Hashochet Shabal Limolech Ketzat Omer Lo, a Shochet that comes to consult with us, what should we tell him? Beis Shammai Omrim, Omer Lo, we tell him, Lech Hafor, Shchot V'chasei. We tell him, dig out the dirt, slaughter, and cover. Here there's no difference between Rabbah's version of Beis Hillel and Rav Yosef's version of Beis Hillel. We tell the Shochet, don't shecht unless you have dirt prepared from the day before. So now, what is the difference between Rabbah and Rav Yosef? So when you look at Rabbah, you see, using the markings, you see that we tell him first shecht and then deal with the dirt. By Rav Yosef, we see first deal with the dirt, dig out the dirt, and then do the shechita. Why the difference? Omar le Abaye the Rav Yosef. Abaye asks Rav Yosef, Lema? Now Rav Yosef was one of the speakers, so he's turning to one of the two speakers, one of the gentlemen in the bow ties. He says, Lema mor v'rabo. More is you in a respectful address. You, sir, and Rabbah. And by the way, note that this is a long question. So Rabbi suggests Rav Yosef, you know, you and Rabbah, maybe you are arguing concerning B'Rabbi Zeira Marav Kol Meflegisu. Your argument within Beis Shammai concerns Rabbi Zeira's din. What's Rabbi Zeira's din? Rabbi Zeira's din has to do with how you do Kisui Hadam. Let's see, what does he say? The Amar Rabbi Zeira Marav, Hashochet, Tzorach Shitein Ofar Lamata V'Ofar Lamala. It's true we use the term covering the blood, but Rabbi Zeira Marav says that the method of having the blood covered is really a sandwich, meaning you place a lower level of dirt and shecht upon the dirt that you placed on the floor, and then above that, after the blood finished dripping onto that particular site, you cover it with another layer of dirt. So we call this a sandwich. And Rabbi Zeira says that that's the way you do Kisui Adam. Reading that in the words again, Hashochet Tzorach Shitein Ofer Lamato V'Ofer Lamala. He has to have a layer of dirt from beneath. Lamato means underneath, and a layer of ofer of dirt above. Lamala, above. Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'Shofach Es Domo V'Chiso Be'Ofer. This has to do with the slaughtering and the need for covering the blood. Ofer Lo Nemar. It doesn't say in the pasuk Ofer, Elo Be'Ofer. The Beis is very significant. Beis, before a word, can mean like besoch, within, then the pasuk is saying the blood shall be covered within dirt. What do you mean within dirt? Malame, this teaches us. That's Rabbi Zeira's halacha. So the question that we deal with is, do you really accept that? Dirt on two levels of dirt with the blood in between? So Abaye continues saying to Rav Yosef, he says, Demor is slay the Rabbi Zeira, you Rav Yosef. Now in Rav Yosef's version, you'll notice that before the slaughtering, there was already the digging of the dirt. In other words, prepare the dirt, layer of dirt below, then shech, and then cover. So you, Rav Yosef, hold like Rabbi Zeira, the sandwich approach. The Rabbo said, no, just go ahead and first shech. There's no dirt underneath. There's no prepared dirt underneath. You're just shechting on a stone floor. And then cover. For Rabbo Leslie, the Rabbi Zeira, and Rabbo would then appear not to hold from Rabbi Zeira's teaching. Omar Le, Rav Yosef, says back to Abaye, Bein Ludidi, Bein Lerabo, Is Lon de Rebbe Zeira. Both of us hold from Rebbe Zeira's teaching. And that means that you need to have first a layer of dirt from below. Now, here, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi is so helpful. Is Lon de Rebbe Zeira, second of the wide lines under the Gemara text toward the end of the line. Both of us hold from Rizu, Bo'inon Ofar Lamato. And you need to have the lower layer of dirt. The Hochi Ko'oma Rabo. And Rabo, in his presentation, he said, well, just go for Shecht. What was Rabo saying? For Shecht. Im Yechoylin Loimar Loishchoit Miyad. If we can tell this person, Shecht immediately. And how would that be? Sheyesh Lo Kvar Ofar Lamato. He already has a layer of dirt there. Sharinon lay, then we'll allow him to shecht on Yom Tov. The shecht, the bird, or the chaya. Avolimonu tzrichim lomar lo chafor tchilo lo natilo. However, if we have to tell him, hey, you don't have your lower layer of dirt, you got to dig out the dirt first and put the layer of dirt down. There, Rabbo will not allow. And now we have to find out why. So let's go back to the Gemara. We're reading the Gemara, five lines from the bottom, in the middle of the line. V'hocha v'hocha mifaginon, and Rav Yosef is explaining to Abaye, and it's in the following that we argue, I, mean Rav Yosef, and Rabbo. Rabbo sovar. Rabbo holds, ika ofer lamato in, if there is already a layer of dirt from below, so, Beis Shammai will say, go ahead and shecht. E, low, if you don't have the lower layer of dirt there yet, low. Then even Beis Shammai will say, don't go ahead and shecht. Chayshinon bil mamamlich velo shochit. We're afraid, says Rabbo. Rabbo says, I am, and in my explanation of Beis Shammai says, we would be afraid that if he's going to first trouble himself with spreading out a lower layer of dirt, maybe after he finishes spreading out the dirt, he is going to change his mind and not continue shechting. And what will have taken place in the meantime? Movement of dirt for no purpose, no Yom Tov purpose. That's a problem of being metatel muktzah for no purpose. So I, says Rabbo, take into consideration the possible change of mind. Ula Didi, says Rav Yosef, according to me, ho adifa. It's better to allow the person to prepare the lower layer of dirt. The ilo shoris lay, if we don't allow him to prepare the lower layer of dirt, osi limnu misim chasyontif. He might come to withhold himself from shechting altogether, and he won't then enjoy Yom Tov. He won't have Simchas Yom Tov. So as far as Rav Yosef is concerned, we don't want to put any barriers in front of a person who plans to shecht his chicken or his deer for his Yom Tov meal. Now, we continue in the Gemara, and before we do the actual text, we glance at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading, Hesper Shel HaMishnah. We have to explain the Mishnah, Deker Notes Miba'od Yom. Literally, it would be a shovel wedged into the ground from before Yom Tov. We continue now. Umoidim. The Gemara, the Mishnah said, Modim Beis Hillel will be, Modim will concede to Beis Shammai, Sheim Shochat, Sheyachbor Bedeker V'yechase. That if he did Shecht, then he can dig out dirt with his shovel and do the Kisui Adam. Omar Rabbi Zera, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, V'hu Sheyesh Lo Deker No Utz Miba'oid Yoim. The Mishnah is allowing, in the post facto scenario where you did shecht, to go ahead and dig out the dirt. This is provided you had a shovel wedged into the ground before Yom Tov. The Gemara asks, how does that help though? V'ha ka'ovid k'sisha. When you dig out hard ground, you're crushing the dirt. And that's a form of grinding, and that is a malacha. There is a prohibition on Yom Tov of doing malachas that aren't directly related to oichel nefesh, to food preparation, and kisui adam is not part of food preparation. If we look at the Rashi, three lines from the bottom, we're focusing the question on Rav Yehuda, the Omar v'hu sheyesh lo deker notes, that the heter. Even Beis Hillel agrees with it. If you shecht it, you can go ahead and do the Kisui Adam. It's provided you have the Deker notes, the wedge in shovel from before Yom Tov. Alma de Taimu de Masnisin. So you see from the Mishnah, Lav Mishum de Osi Asay de Vechisob Ofar de Dochi Eslo Sase Komalacha. We're allowing the Kisui not based on the halachic principle of a positive command overruling a negative command. In this case, the positive command is v'chisov b'afar. The negative command is do not do malachas on Yom Tov. So that the heter of Kisui Adam is not based on that principle of let the positive come and overrule the negative. Elo mishum dekvar chofur v'yoy meidhu. The heter is because the shovel was already dug into the ground from Erev Yom Tov. The Gemara asks, but still, but still you're involved with crushing because the clumps of earth are stuck together. They're not fit for kisa unless you crush them. It has to be fine dirt, not clumps, not clods of dirt. The koseish told the toichinu malachihi. Koseish, the act of crushing clumps of dirt is an outgrowth, a tolda of the malacha, of the chief type malacha known as toching, of grinding, and it's forbidden to do on Yom Tov. So what kind of heter is Rav Yehuda giving us? Omar of Chiyo Barashi, Omar Rav, and we continue at the top of Ches Omer Aleph, Be'ofar Tichuach. The shovel is prepared, Erev Yom Tov, wedged into the ground, but what kind of dirt? Loose, fine dirt. Question, V'ha ka'ovid guma, when he lifts his shovel up with a shovel full of loose dirt, fine, there's no malacha of ksisha, but there is a malacha of bone, construction, and that's in the form of making the hole, digging a hole, is considered an act of construction. And that's a separate malacha called boneh. The Gemara says, Kidder Rabbi Abba, we're going to understand how it is allowed through Rabbi Abba's principle. The Yom Rabbi Abba, HaChofer Guma B'Shabbos V'Eino Tzorch El Alafra, a person who digs a hole on Shabbos, or in this case on Yom Tov, and his whole purpose is to get the dirt. He needs only the dirt. He's not interested in the hole. Potter Oleho. He is exempt. That is not considered a malacha. So there's no problem here of bone there's no problem of tochein. All that is, it's a, as Rashi calls it, it's a mekalkel. He had a nice flat surface of ground. Now he digs out the loose dirt, leaving a hole in the ground, and he doesn't need that hole. All it is he's, as far as the act of digging is concerned, it's a mekalkel. It's a destructive activity. And as a result of that, it's not considered a Shabbos Yom Tov violation. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.